Today on Coding 101, we speak with Liam Kennedy, the inventor of ISS Above. It's time to get coding.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Coding 101 is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/C101. That's lynda.com/C101. Welcome to Coding 101. It's the TWiT show where we show you the secrets of the code monkey. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Shannon Morse. And today we have some really interesting fun stuff happening. And it's a little bit different for anybody watching the stream right now. It's a little different, so don't freak out. We are actually sitting in the living room set because we have an interview today. So we just finished our C# module. We did, eight episodes, I believe?
Eight episodes of C#.
So we did 8 episodes of our C# module, and we went through everything from beginner to some crazy advanced stuff. And today, since we're going to be moving to a different module in 2 weeks, we decided to break it up with a really cool interview from somebody that we know in the tech sphere that knows a little bit about some code and what you can do once you become a true advanced code monkey.
That's right, folks. Now, remember, when we created the show, we thought we didn't want to just jump from one language to another. Snubs and I met, and we said, look, we got to give them a chance to recover. Give them a chance to step back from that coding ledge and maybe look at a couple of people who have successfully turned code into something wonderful, which is why I am so happy to welcome to the show Mr. Liam Kennedy. Liam, thank you so much for coming up.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you're from Pasadena, right?
I am, yes. I'm the little old coder from Pasadena, yeah.
So the home of the Big Bang Theory.
The home of the Big Bang Theory, and yes, if you sort of look at what I've got going on here in front of me and imagine my house, we've pretty much been living in the Big Bang Theory in my house for the last 3 months.
Now, Liam, before we get into the wonderful hardware that's in front of us, could you just give the TWiT Army, the Coding 101 Code Monkeys, a little idea of who you are, where you come from, and why you're standing in front of the ISS Above?
Sure. So, firstly, the ISS Above, obviously what it does is, on the basics of it, it just lights up whenever the space station is around, which happens more frequently than you'd imagine. But my interest in the ISS is really what brought me to develop this. So for many years, I've been passionate about public outreach for astronomy. And a common thing that I would always get involved in is looking out for when the space station is coming over. Because, you know, the public just really love to be surprised by things that they didn't realize that was there. And many people just don't realize it's actually around.
Now, you mentioned to me previously that you can actually see the space station come over, like especially at night when the sun's reflecting off of it, about every 90 minutes or so, according to gravity, at least.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, it comes over, it really covers 90% of the world's population.
Wow.
Every day. And that's because it's in its orbit, spinning around at 17,000 miles an hour, about 260 miles up. And the Earth spins underneath it.
Yeah.
If you imagine, that's what's really going
on.
So it covers a lot of ground. But that sort of gives you an idea of what my interest in the space station, and then how I then came to, you know, do this development. So I have been a developer for many years. So, you know, I started out on the Sinclair ZX81. I think I destroyed it when I tried to solder it together.
Well, that's what we love, right?
Right.
You're on the show. Shannon and I are always talking about if you like something, if you really want to play with it, get in there, see what makes it work, and break a few things.
Break it, yes.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I haven't broken too many of these so far, but I have tried to. So my history is sort of somewhat as a developer and a hacker, and up until this project, I would have called myself a .NET developer.
Okay.
So, you know, that was my street cred, was, you know, working in that environment. And then the opportunity came up to look at this project, and Python was the way to go. So I very quickly sort of got into that mode of working.
So do you have a pretty good experience with not only Python, but C# and C++ and Java and all those different ones?
Yes, I do. But I would really classify myself as someone who is self-trained. So I didn't do a lot of this in college. I mostly learned what I learned by just getting involved in the first computers that were available for home use, and then programming it.
I actually really like to hear that, because one of the things that we've run into a lot is our audience is mixed. We have people who have never coded before. And we have people who have been coding for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And you know this. Programmers get incredibly protective about their language, their way of learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's true. When I was teaching programming, there was always a curriculum. There was always step one, step two, step three, step four. I think Shannon and I have been trying to do something different. We've been trying to give people interesting projects, give them the little steps forward, and let them go out and actually figure out how it works.
Yes, exactly.
It sounds to me that your lineage is more of that second way of doing it.
It really is. And when I go back to thinking how I started out creating this code, I start out just by actually trying out little things and seeing if I can get a little bit working first, and then build on that. So rather than coming at a project thinking, well, this is what I've got to get the whole thing to do in the end. Because firstly, it's just too big a problem to tackle.
Right.
So I just take on little bits and get them working. And then I get some good feedback, sort of, yay, I got that working. And then I can just move on from there. The disadvantage, though, potentially, is if you look at my code, it's the most embarrassing code around.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It contains workarounds for problems that I encountered while I was developing in that mode. And then, you know, it turned out to be other problems. So if you look at the code, you'll see comments about, you know, what went wrong and, oh, I've tried to fix it by doing this. So that's my programming style.
Well, I
it's
think we'll
embarrassing.
Be taking a bit of a look at your code later,
I think,
shall
so.
We?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. and you know, I understand this. If you sit down and you map everything out with your team and you're all responsible for modules, yeah, you really do need to adhere to certain principles to make sure that everyone's code is going to interact properly.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're the hacker and you're sitting in a garage and you're like, hey, you know what? I'm going to make this light blink. Oh, it blinks? Now I'm going to make that sound port turn on. Now I'm going to activate this I.O. I think it's actually acceptable. In fact, it's preferred to have spaghetti code. I mean, you understand. I mean, we know how this works, right? It's just getting it to work, that first feeling of, we call it, yatta! Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, look at that. It's cool. But let me ask you this. When you are developing a project like ISS Above, do you just try to break down real-world problems into the little pieces that can be solved by code? I mean, how do you go about moving from, I like the ISS, I like space exploration, mm-hmm. to, I'm going to make a Raspberry Pi program that can tell me when it's above me?
Yeah, so I'll go back 3 years. I think this bears mentioning. 3 years ago, I heard about another project called ISS Notify that was going to create a little Arduino-based device that would light up whenever the space station comes over. And I backed it, along with quite a few other people. And after seeing a lot of great progress by the creator for a couple of years, mm-hmm. then it just looked like things just stopped happening. So, and there's, you know, you can speculate as to why that happened, but the end result
Sometimes
is...
it happens.
Yeah, so 3 years, and I didn't have this cool little device that lit up when the space station came by. So I just really just gave up waiting. And Aww. Decided to see what I could create, and thankfully, you know, in the time that elapsed from then to now, we ended up, you know, building the Raspberry Pi version. Now, I never knew really about the Raspberry Pi seriously until October of last year, although it's been around for several years before then, and it's British.
Oh, really?
As well, yes.
Right.
It was
Evan
developed by, yeah. So with a name like that, it should be, right? So, and I started to look at the Raspberry Pi actually for a different reason. I do video streaming and web shows a little bit like this. Not really. but with Bill Nye, the science guy, and things. And I needed a way to play out videos. And one of the users of the switcher that I use actually showed a video of how they created a video playout system using the Raspberry Pi. I bought one to look to see whether I could use it for that. When I got it, I was blown away with just how flexible the Raspberry Pi platform was. And I decided to, it was just like the two things came together. Me being fed up with not having, you know, a little device that lit up when the space station was coming over, because I, you know, wanted to get that. And here's a Raspberry Pi. I just decided to take a look and very quickly found out that I could actually do things with it, you know, beyond what I thought was going to be possible.
Now, I know that the original ISS Above project wasn't based on a Pi, it was based on an Arduino, which might explain some of the difficulties they had in getting it to work right. You know, you always have to balance the capabilities of the platform with what you're trying to make it do. But even though the Pi is a wonderful device, we use it here on KnowHow, our DIY show, all the time. It's a great, inexpensive device that really gets you to hack, to get you to program, gets you to play with what's possible. Why would you choose the Pi over anything else? Was it just convenience? Was it just because you already had one for this other project?
So I would say it was a matter of coincidence that I happened to have the Raspberry Pi in front of me. But I did some very quick testing of what I needed my code to do, and it's perfectly adequate for it. Absolutely. You know, the other project, I believe the way it was going to work was pull information every few days off the web from some websites out there that list the same data.
Oh, right.
But my code actually does all of the calculations for where the ISS is on the device. There's basically a standard library you can get called FM. It's spelled E-P-H-E-M. It's for ephemeris. It's an astronomical term. But I use that to do the calculations on the device, and it works just great.
Wait. So I was under the impression that your project scraped some sort of publicly available database to say, oh, yeah, it's over your latitude and longitude. You're saying the Pi would know just because of the calculations you've programmed
it. Yeah, I tell you, if I didn't need the access to the internet for the clock, you could just unplug it from the internet, and it would just work perfectly well. What it does pull down every few days is what's called the NASA two-line element. It's actually basically a set of data points that defines the orbit.
Oh.
And NASA updates that every few days. They probably update it minute by minute. But they, you know, the ISS shifts its position.
Right.
Usually it's dropping down naturally because although it's up in space, it's still impacted a little bit by the upper atmosphere.
Yeah.
So it tends to drag itself back down, and then they use rockets to push it back up again.
So you use capsule to push it back up into its proper orbit.
So the equation has to be updated. So that's what this the Raspberry Pi does use the internet for, is to pull down that information every few days.
Wow. Now, that's a lot of information for it to pull down.
Why would you take that approach? I mean, because my first inkling would be to reach out to NASA and say, if you're offering data of where the station is orbiting, I'm going to scrape your publicly available feed and just match that up with a location selection inside the UI. Instead, you decided to bake the calculations into the Pi with that external variable of, okay, well, what have they done to orbit adjustment?
Yeah. Well, there were several reasons. The most important one to me was that I did want this to be something that eventually I could put a real-time clock on it. And then it would only need infrequent connection to the internet to actually pull that information. The other thing is the main site where people get the data for where the ISS is for their location, it's actually a site called heavens-above.com. And that site has been crashing because of the number of apps, mostly on smartphones, that do exactly what you say.
Right.
They didn't publish an API, so the way that every developer has done it is to do exactly what you say. But unfortunately, it puts a hit on their server. In fact, I don't know if they've still got it there, but they actually had...
It's up at the moment. But yeah, you're right, because this puts you at the mercy of a server that you have no control over.
Yeah, you don't want to depend on an external source.
Yeah, if they go down, your product doesn't work anymore.
And also, I had an experience of this, because my first app that I ever developed for a phone was for a Windows phone, and it's called Look Up Tonight.
Oh, cool.
And it does really this and more, but what it's really doing is exactly that. It's pulling the data from heavens above and then displaying it on the on the smartphone. And they changed the page. Oh. And of course, oops, the code broke. And then I had to I had to update the app and then release it to the marketplace again. And
reminds me of every Twitter app that I ever tried to run. It would work until Twitter changed the API and suddenly, change it. Actually, have you ever met our chat room? Wonderful people. We've got people in the chat room who actually, they're impressed. They understand what you're trying to do. We have Eric Duckman and Bevo who are both saying, look, the calculations to do that, the number crunchings that you have to make your Pi do in order to figure out the orbit, that's not trivial.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a lot of work.
It is, and I am not a rocket scientist. So I really couldn't do that math, but this library that you can get, it's just you install it with one line. You've seen it, sudo, whatever it is, apt-get, blah, blah, or pip python install, whatever it is. I've forgotten it all. And then there's the FM library. And then you can then start coding against that yourself. And, of course, the code is visible for anyone to see. You can look at what I've done.
Okay, so you had this code figured out, the mathematical equations to find the ISS above you at a certain time.
Yes.
And you figured out that you can put this on a Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
What's next was just figuring out how I could use the Raspberry Pi display options to, indicate what's going on. And that's really what you see in front of you here.
That's why we have these LEDs blinking.
Yeah. So I've always enjoyed anything with a blinking light.
Well, let's get into the hardware.
Because
our guys love hardware. Mm-hmm. And we've got all these wonderful boxes sitting in front of us. Tell us, what are they doing?
So where do I start? I'll start with this one that is just... very easy to look at, right? Oh, maybe I'll go over here. Here we go. So this is the basic one with the Raspberry Pi platform, and it simply has a very simple display on it called a Pi Glow.
It's a shield, right? It plugs right into the GPIO.
Yeah, it plugs into the GPIO port, and in fact, you can even see that I haven't put it in very nicely there. but that's all it is. And then I just program the light to do a certain sequence based on where the space station is.
Ah.
This is another version. This is with...
So that one's blinking.
Yeah, and this one, if you count the number of green flashes, let's see if it's going to do it.
One,
two. Okay.
Oh, four. Five.
Six.
Six.
Okay, so... if it's approximately an hour or less, the ISS above flashes green the number of times for the number of 10-minute intervals.
Oh,
perfect.
So
okay.
Now I have messed around with the time on these, so I'm not sure if this is real time now. I don't think it is. So essentially that says it's up to 60 minutes away from the next pass of ISS. So, and, not all the passes are visible. And that's why I've got another website. So the other thing I've got going on here, you were talking about just the Raspberry Pi being underpowered. Well,
right.
Just think of this. This thing tweets. So when the space station is is particularly close to you, all of the lights on here really start going crazy. But it also sends a tweet.
So I could program it to say, the ISS is above me.
Yes.
Does it tweet to the ISS?
Well, yeah, it sort of. It tweets Ooh. To the ISS by tagging at the request of NASA. So during the Kickstarter program, they got wind of what was going on, and their public affairs coordinator at NASA Johnson Space Center, which is mission control for ISS, mm-hmm. sent me an email saying, could you please make sure that you tag at NASA underscore Johnson?
Great.
So that was neat. That they also do tweet to at ISS underscore research,
cool.
which is the research arm. They're the organization for NASA that actually determines what research is done on the space station by the astronauts.
So they're receiving thousands of tweets from all your pies saying, I see your ISS.
Well, yeah, and that's a good point. So I've run a Kickstarter that was very successful, but before that, I wanted to make absolutely certain that people wanted this and also that they could see that it was working already. So,
absolutely.
You know, bearing in mind the other Kickstarter didn't fulfill its, what it was going to do.
Wait.
So I created a beta program and I was heading over to the UK in December and I installed a couple of them in my grandkids. So the grandkids got them. And then there was a post on Hackaday and on Reddit. And then people suddenly started to approach me saying, hey, can I get in on this beta program?
Wow.
So I had about 20 sites. So what you're seeing right here now are the tweets. So I'm just on my page here. You'll actually see the tweets that are coming from those beta sites that are around the world.
Nice.
That's so cool.
And the way it's done is this little device is posting to my WordPress site. And the WordPress site is sending the tweet.
Oh.
What I like about this is you're leveraging a lot of existing tools mm-hmm. to do something that's very different. And that's very much in the hacker spirit. Now, Liam, we want to come back to this. We want to talk all about your Kickstarter. Because I know there's people out there who are wondering how they create their own successful Kickstarter, and yours, by any measure, was immensely successful. We also want to look at some of this other hardware. You showed us some of the finished product, a Raspberry with a LED shield, something in a nice finished enclosure. You've got some interesting projects on this table over here that I think they'd be interested to see. But before that, I want to take just a moment to thank our sponsor. Now, you know them, you love them, they've been with us since the beginning of Coding 101. They're Lynda. Now, what is Lynda? Quite simply, Lynda is how you learn online. Now, Lynda is an online learning company that can help anyone learn creative, software, and business skills to achieve both personal and professional goals. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to a vast library of current and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects. Everything from creative and software skills to business negotiation and programming. At Lynda.com, you'll learn how to code, create, and build applications from the foundations of object-oriented programming in C and C++ to desktop and mobile apps for today's popular operating systems. You'll explore the fundamentals of programming, building web applications with .NET, PHP, and MySQL, managing data with SQL databases, connecting to cloud services, and much more. Now, we love Lynda because we understand that with Coding 101, we're not giving you all the steps. We're not giving you all the knowledge. You're not going to finish an 8-week module and say, oh, well, now I know how to program. Now I know what C-sharp is. That's why you need something like Lynda, which will guide you through the steps, which will teach you the correct way to program, which will give you all the information that we can't give you each and every week of Coding 101. Lynda.com lets you improve your skills, learn new software, and keep up with technology with over 2,000 courses with more added daily. Their popular courses right now include Foundations of Programming, HTML, PHP with MySQL, Objective-C, Java, JavaScript, and WordPress. Their instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields, and they're all expert teachers. And those two don't necessarily go together. But Lynda has gathered together the staff, the faculty, to make sure that they have competent teachers who know how to present the information. Lynda has high-quality video productions from state-of-the-art studios. These aren't your homemade videos that you'll find on YouTube. Although we love YouTube, I mean, heck, we're on YouTube. There is something to be said about using good video and good lighting and good audio, because it doesn't matter how wonderful the knowledge is. If you can't stand the sound or the video, you're not going to watch it. Lynda also offers you curated course content. Each lynda.com course is carefully structured so that users can learn from start to finish or jump to a specific chapter. They have easy-to-follow videos that can help you find the answers that you need and searchable transcripts that even let you search within a video to save you time and find exactly what you're looking for. No more scanning through a video to find some random piece of information that comes 15 seconds into the fourth season. No, 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 no. You can search for exactly what you're looking for and find the answers you need right now. They have courses for all experience levels, from beginner, intermediate, and advanced, covering a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and oh, so much more. You can watch from your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device, and Lynda even lets you switch and pick up the chapter where you left off from device to device. In other words, you get to learn at your own pace, on your own time, on your own schedule, when you want to. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to Lynda's entire course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try lynda.com free right now with a 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/C101 to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/C101. And we thank Lynda for their support of Coding 101.
Now, guys, Pyglo
blinking,
is making
blinking
lights.
Blinking, blinking.
What's going on?
This thinks it's 12:30 p.m.
Oh.
So
it thinks it's flashing.
It thinks it's 12:30 p.m. So it is, this is what it does when the space station is getting closer.
Oh, that is
so
cool.
So it starts off going slow, but then as the space station gets closer to you and higher up in the sky, it then goes crazy wild.
It goes nuclear.
That is awesome.
Or nuclear.
And,
Noticeable.
A really great companion to this is a little app. If you have an iOS device, there's an app called Solar Walk, and this is it right here.
Wait a minute, I think I saw this in a movie.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, I did the animation for Gravity. No,
okay.
Not really. So this is real time, and this is actually showing it as it's coming. There we go.
That's exactly what I thought this was going to be.
There we go.
This is why you need ISS above. It will tell you where the space junk is.
So we had seen the ISS above California just a little bit earlier, maybe half an hour ago, and now it's over an ocean.
Yeah, so it is I think it was a little bit longer than you're probably remembering, because I've been talking for so long.
RTD is enjoying space. There, you know, if you talk about space in a room full of geeks, everything's going to come out.
Where is it now?
Can you see? That's the Aleutian Islands, I think. That's the chain of... So I can zoom way out.
Oh, there we go. Oh,
and you can see it's...
Oh, wow, it even shows
you
the orbits.
Is it the Aleutian? Did I get that right?
Now, what are those other dots?
It's going the other way around. I've got it going... I'm all upside down.
Those are other spacecraft?
I should be... Yes, those are other satellites.
Wow.
That's incredible.
And, yeah, you look at this, you think, oh, yeah, of course, gravity. They were, going from the space station to the shuttle to the...
I know.
When you see this, but
they're
in different orbits.
The Death Star, right? Death Star's in that orbit.
So, yeah, so this, I think, is going in that direction. So in... a short while, I think it's actually going to be visible over here again.
Ah,
so it will
okay.
be. But these, the Pyglo here, this version, I've got it on a different time.
Right, okay.
Now, our chat room is right on it. We've got Eric Duckman who is saying, no. The ISS isn't moving that quickly. It's just we are. They always remind us that we're the ones spinning.
Yeah, because we are rotating on our axis, and then the ISS is also
most of the 17,500 speed though is falling around the Earth. Obviously, the Earth is spinning, and we're spinning. It takes us a day, surprisingly, to spin around once. So that's why it traverses different parts of the globe every time it comes around. So it will be a different distance from us at its closest point. each time.
Now, we want to take a look at this hardware because our TD has been trying to focus on this table forever. I think
yes.
he's most interested by this. What am I looking at?
Well, yeah, let me introduce you to what I've got over here. So there's two different display items here. This one is a custom light that was also a successful Kickstarter.
Oh, wow.
But what it did was just looked good as a representation of the ISS. Now, the creator of this, we were just looking at working together, and initially he wanted to get one himself. And so he modified the internal electronics of this so that I could do a little bit of control.
Cool.
Just basic control. So there's really two colored lamps in here.
And that's what we have going on.
Yeah, that's my very amazingly proud and lovely breadboard that I put together there. And
we all start with breadboard, so there's no shame here.
So... I was just amazed at how these things could be added on. And there are just a couple of transistors.
And this is connected into the Raspberry Pi.
Yes. And there's just two of the control ports I use in the code, because part of the code configuration is choosing what display device is attached. So I've just set it when you're using the ISS light that it will just flash GPIO pins 24 and 25. And depending on which one I have cabled in there, it'll either be the Earth or the space station. You can see it flashes every now
and
again.
That's cool.
That's actually very cool.
And that's really, really simple. I've got to say that there's no guarantee that this will be made available to the general public.
Right.
But last I saw,
but
you could buy the lamp.
It's one of those fun hacker things that you can do with it.
Yes. So I think what this shows is that you can get the Raspberry Pi, have the code, and then you can build this. You can build whatever you want with it.
Now, this one over here. I really like this because this looks like what I would want on my desk.
So this one is...
you put an LCD display on it.
Yeah, that's an Adafruit 16-character by two-line display.
So an LCD screen.
And this is an RGB one, so it can change color as well. But this gives a lot of information about the next pass of the space station and the current pass if it's happening in real time.
With this, with the software, with the package that you downloaded, would it be possible to, say, give people azimuth information?
Yes. In fact, this does do that. During an active pass, it does tell you how high up it is and where in the sky to look.
So someone could actually take this and use it mobile, plug it into a battery, because, again, we know it doesn't need access to the Internet as long as the software is running on it. And they could use it to know exactly where they need to point their telescope to get the best possible view of the ISS.
They could do, and that's where I think what you were saying earlier about the power of the Raspberry Pi, it might not be sufficient to do that, because the number of calculations that you'd need to do per second
to
keep a telescope aligned on the space station is quite a lot.
But it could at least tell you where to look.
Absolutely. It would do that. And this one, it also has an additional display item sticking out of it. This is called a blink stick. And that has the really bright RGB LED that lights up. I can probably actually get on there and tell it to light up in a minute as well. But so there's two display devices plugged into the same unit there. And I'm also working on, I've got a couple of Blink Ones, which is another Kickstarter. Isn't it amazing? All of these Kickstarter projects. That is just a little USB LED as well. So looking to get that supported. And a lot of different display types as well.
So, speaking of your Kickstarter, you were obviously successful. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Too.
You asked for $5,000, you got $17,600.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've never done anything like this before. I came at it completely green, and I just didn't know what to expect. What I tried to do was to look at what would be a minimum for me to be able to get all of the components with free shipping, so that the cost of putting a system together would be as low as I could make it.
Yeah.
And what that was really all about was just trying to keep. There was the individual component costs.
Right.
And when I went out there I've sort of lost my train of thought here. That's cool.
So I can still buy one, though, if I missed the Kickstarter myself, unfortunately. But I can still buy one from your website?
Correct? You can, yes, because I haven't yet completed the order of all of the component parts.
Hear that chat room?
Yeah, so you can still purchase them right now.
Cool.
And that the whole Kickstarter was just an amazing blast. You know, it doesn't just happen by putting a Kickstarter up there and then sitting back.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot that went on behind the scenes of doing Twitter, you know, a lot of Twitter posts, actually connecting with the astronomical blogging community.
Oh, wow.
I had a few people that were well known in that community that blogged about it, stuff on Google Plus, and you know, things just sort of came together. So
Padre,
yeah, it went very well.
Now, Padre, I really want to see some code.
Oh yeah, I know. We've been teasing our audience long enough. Now, here's the thing. I know that we don't want to just hand your code out to everyone. In fact, that was one of the questions I want to ask you. I'll ask it later about how difficult it is to monetize something on a platform that everyone just assumes is free. But first, I don't want to see all your code, but I would love to see segments of your code that you're particularly proud of. Is there something that you figured out how to do that you think maybe our audience might be able to play with?
Yeah, I'm going to show you a bit of my spaghetti code right now.
All right, let's go. I love spaghetti.
And this was... So there's an attribute of... the space station when it's coming over, that is its visual magnitude, how bright it is in the sky, if it happens to be a pass when it might be visible. Not all passes at nighttime are visible.
Right, because if it's passing over you in complete darkness with no angle to the sun, it's going to be black.
Correct.
There's nothing off it.
Yeah. So, but oftentimes, if it's passing early in the morning before sunrise, just before sunrise, or in the evening, you know, within a few hours after sunset, when it's going over, it's still visible to the sun. So it's up there.
Cool.
Now, the FM library did not have any function to figure out the visual magnitude of any satellite. So I had to figure out how that was done.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did the usual Googling, and various people came back with, that's really difficult to do and blah, blah, blah. And I just didn't want to give up. So all it came down to in the end was a bit of high school math.
Really?
You know, remember that algebra thing?
Don't remind me.
So you're figuring out a triangle? Is that
yeah, it was just crazy. So it is. So what's going on here is I have, using the code that I've already got, the distance between you and the space station, and I have the angle of it. So I know where it is. I have the distance between you and the sun.
And then you figure out that
and the
third
angle
leg.
To the sun. So I have those
it's
two
geometry.
And those two angles, and I had to figure out this missing angle.
Yeah.
It's called the phase angle between you, the space station, and the sun.
Huh.
And this is the code that does it. I wonder if I actually even left in. Anyway, I was just so amazed when I figured it out.
There you have it, folks. You know, do you remember back in high school when your teacher told you that trigonometry would save your life? Well, here it is. All right, so now you figured this out, I mean, which automatically is fantastic, because I can imagine the people on Google saying, oh, that's really hard. Just why do you want to do that? Because I can't figure it out. But no, you persisted, and you figured out, wait a minute, there's a spatial thing here. If the sun... If I can see the sun, and if the sun can see the ISS, then that means that I can see the sun bouncing off the ISS. Mm-hmm. How do you turn that into code?
Into code, yeah. So that's really what I've got here. Gosh, how can I even take you through what's here? Because it's math, and I've forgotten it all already. but you can actually see some of the components in it that I talked about here. So,
and this is all in Python, by the way,
right? Yeah, this is all in Python, so... there's a couple of things going on. This first thing, if ISS.eclipsed. Now, ISS is an object that is the current status of the ISS. And if it's eclipsed, it means it's actually eclipsed by the Earth's shadow.
Correct.
So it won't be visible. Mm-hmm. But then what I do is I have the sun, and I compute the details for the sun, and this will give me a whole load of data about the distance between me and the sun at that particular point, and that's what we have going here. So this is where I'm these are the equations A, B, and C. You know, that's okay. to do with the triangle.
So distance to the sun, distance to the ISS, and then figuring out the angle between the two.
Yeah. So what I've got here is A is the distance to the sun. So the sun dot Earth distance is the distance between the Earth and the sun times the astronomical unit, which is to do with how many kilometers it is to the sun, minus the radius of the Earth. So because, you know, we're sitting up from the center of the Earth, so I had to subtract that. I don't think it would have made a big difference.
In the 93 million miles,
whatever, it wouldn't have made a lot of difference.
But you know what? We love the fact that you thought about that.
Yes, there you go. And then the side B is the range to the ISS. And in this, in the object here, it gives it in, I think, meters. So I divide it by 1,000 to get it in kilometers. And then there's this angle. You know, one of the angles that I have is the angle. It's to do with the azimuth and altitude. So this is where you were saying this is where that data comes from.
And so you're pulling from the ephemeral framework here.
Yes,
I got
exactly.
It.
So it is just there. And this is, so that does that. And then finally, I have this length C, which is that, remember that square root A squared plus B squared equals C squared.
There it is, folks.
All right.
There's the proof. That's why you need to learn that.
Anyhow, but I just want to let you know, I did forget it all because I had to relearn it for this. So, but hey, at least I knew what I had forgotten.
Absolutely.
So, and then this is where finally this last bit is the bit that I needed. The phase angle is all of this. Oh, look, it's Pi Day.
It is Pi Day. Yeah, 3.14.
Yes, and actually, there you go. Math.
We just passed Super Pi, which was 3.1415.
Yes.
Oops, we should have taken a moment for that. Now, I will say this. I love the fact that you're bringing this up because we just introduced objects and classes to our Coding 101 crew. And some people were a little confused by, what's a class? What's the property? You were just showing us some things. And if they were paying attention to the Coding 101 lessons, they should have been able to see that. And even though it's a completely different language, they should have seen some of the similarities, some of the things that you can look at this and go, oh, I see an if statement there. I see the assignment of a variable. I see playing with the property of a class and of an object. This, I see a return. These are all elements that recur in whatever programming language we're using. It just happens that this one is Python. So thank you for that.
Wow.
You're very welcome. And then the final piece just on here, the bit that I really came in here is the magnitude, the visual magnitude. And this is where I plug in my phase angle to this equation. That equation I didn't create. It was out there on the web on some site that said this is how, as long as you have the phase angle, this is how you can figure out the visual magnitude.
So you worked backwards.
Yep, exactly.
You knew you needed the phase angle.
I often work backwards.
You said, how can I find that?
Yep, life just occurs better if you do it backwards.
So the phase angle, is that the part that I see on the website when I'm using my own ISS above Raspberry Pi? Negative 2.3.
Yeah, no, so that's the magnitude. If I bring up the web page here, so this is the other thing that the Raspberry Pi has running on it.
Okay.
It has this web server on it using another installation that you can just download yourself. It's called, I want to pronounce it Flask, but it's probably Flask.
You know what? Flask sounds so much nicer. Let's do that.
It does.
Yes. So
we use Flask, but get our website,
and go
to the IP address. Mm-hmm.
So, and this is another Python file called www.issabove.py.
Okay.
And it then gives all of this information. So this, again, is coming directly from the Raspberry Pi itself. It doesn't have to go to any website to do it. It's got it right here. And this is where you can see at 6:40 a.m. tomorrow, if you happen to be in Petaluma or anywhere in San Francisco area, you would be able to see a very bright international space station.
Wow. Negative numbers mean it's brighter.
Negative is better.
Okay.
Yes, in this case, it is better. So if you go out and you happen to look up at the moment at nighttime,
yeah.
you'll see the brightest star above you.
Which seems to be moving rather quickly.
I don't know which one you're talking about. The one I'm talking about is, so not space station, the brightest star every night you look above you is the one that's not twinkling, and it is the planet Jupiter.
Right.
So it's almost directly up. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm bringing that up is that is approximately the same brightness as this.
Oh,
so,
cool.
So this is, so the space station, it can get a lot brighter than this as well.
Wow.
But it's a little bit dimmer.
I remember when the ISS first went up in its complete configuration, people were saying, oh, well, it's now the brightest object in the sky. And I'm like, I don't think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But with this device, you can tell them when it will be true, when it will
yes.
be the brightest object mm-hmm. in the sky.
Very true.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now let's back off a little bit. I hope people have geeked out a little bit over that. I love that fact that you're so proud of that little piece of code, that function that calculates the angle and the phase. Fantastic. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
But let's talk a little bit to the people who might now think, oh, I'm going to create a Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to grab the Pi, and like Liam, I'm going to figure out a problem, and I'm going to hard code it in my Pi, and it's going to be wonderful. I alluded to this a little earlier, and that is the Pi is considered a hacking tool.
Mm-hmm.
And typically the people who use the Raspberry Pi expect everything to be free. I know that whenever I do my projects, I'm always doing apt-get and I'm downloading packages.
Yeah.
How difficult is it for you trying to monetize a product on the Pi when people mm-hmm. kind of expect, well, once I've got the code, I can just share it with anyone?
It's interesting, and that depends on who the audience is. I'm pretty sure that most of the people who actually purchased backed the Kickstarter, who got the complete unit themselves. That was where, you know, it came with everything needed. Just plug it in and go. They're not the hacker type. So for them, this is something that allows them to just get something and
right.
work with it right away. So that's not the issue. But I did provide a version of the code that is customized to your location and also set up so it tweets. And it's a custom image on the SD card.
Oh.
Now that and the cost of that, was on the Kickstarter $42.
Oh.
So I've got to admit that sounds quite expensive. This is what I was going through. It's like, yeah, how can I get beyond the question that is out there that this is all open source?
Right.
It really just speaks to what you're talking about. And I've got to say, I've been a bit conflicted about it
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I've invested a lot of time in what I've got, what I've produced here so far.
I've been there.
And I'm still conflicted about it.
Yep.
You know, at some point,
I know exactly
maybe
how you feel.
It will just be, I'll just put it out there. Because I know, well, firstly, the code is available. When you get it, you can do whatever
right,
you want
right.
to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already had people on the beta program, you know, develop stuff for it. And, you know, I'm just not sure where it's going to go from there. There was even on some of the boards, I think Hackaday, there was or on Reddit, someone said, why on earth would anyone pay $42? You can just do this yourself.
I think it comes down to supporting something that you love.
Mm.
That's what it is for me. It might not be open source, but I'm supporting a person that I love, and I'm supporting mm-hmm. a project that I really think could get children inspired and get people really inspired in learning about astronomy
yeah.
and learning about code. So that's why I would purchase it.
Mm-hmm. And you said it, and you sort of put aside the fact that, it's open source. One of the comments I had from Reddit was, well, my Raspberry Pi has been sitting gathering dust because mm-hmm. I couldn't find something that I wanted to use it for. And they saw this as a reason why they would, you know, get it out of its dusty box
yeah.
and
put it
on it. So it can, you know, even if you are someone who's got a Raspberry Pi, you can now, this is what you can use it for.
Yeah.
It's the phenomenon of course you could figure out how to do this. Of course you could have busted this out and downloaded a bunch of packages and done a little bit of math. But someone actually did it.
Yes.
And if you would, if you like what he did and if you want him to continue doing what he did, why not support him? I think that's
good
really
point.
What we do that in content. I mean, our content's free. You don't have to do anything with our content. You don't have to do anything with our with the code that we create. But we offer it out there, and we hope that people like it enough that they'll feel compelled to support us. That's about what we can say.
Yep. And Shannon, I wanted to speak to what you brought up about this being something that inspires kids.
Yeah.
Because that was the point for this. I had, the vision I had was that I was just creating this for my grandkids.
That's so cool.
So, and when I was initially, just after I started, you know, messing with this, and I took it to the San Diego Maker Faire in December, very early versions of this, I didn't know how well it was going to be, you know, received there. And it was when a young kid who was probably 9 years old came up to me near the end of it and just sort of whispered to me and said, this is the coolest thing here.
And that's really all the praise you can get.
So cool.
There's nothing better than that, right?
I didn't need anything else. It really does. Because that is what this is about for me. You know, I think there's an opportunity to inspire people all around the world with this. You know, I've got one of these going to Beirut.
Oh, wow.
And the backer emailed me and said, does the space station even come over here? I said, I don't care because I just want to back this. And of course, that is the point. There's no borders in space.
Yeah.
And this space station that's been manned for 13 years, built by 16 nations, has Russian astronauts, cosmonauts, whatever you want to call them, and American astronauts, while down below, you know, we're at odds politically right now. But, hey, guys, they're just getting on with stuff. It's just a model. It's a model.
It gives me chills just thinking about it. That's just amazing. I love it.
Liam, unfortunately, we've run out of time. We've gone way over time just because we've had so much fun. We've been enjoying ourselves. I know.
What time is
go
it?
Figure. It's, but I do want to give you some time to talk directly to the audience and tell them, what can we expect out of ISS Above? I mean, will you expand this project? Do you have another project coming? Where can they find you? Where can they find out about the work you do?
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, you can go to my website, issabove.com. That has a lot of information about the current project and how you can also purchase one right now, only for the next couple of days because I've got to complete the order. But going forward from here, I really want to create some more custom versions of this. This works great in the home and on a shelf. But I really see this as being something that could be at the Exploratorium.
Oh, yeah.
Down in, you know, any planetarium. And for those, I want to create something that has a bigger type of interface. Mm-hmm. So something more like this, but possibly with an embedded LCD display in it.
Right, right.
So that's one aspect. The other thing is I've been... politely, I'll call it, I've been hammered by the ham radio community. Oh, that worked. I didn't need, that just sort of came out. The ham radio community, because the ISS, plus many other satellites up there, do act as radio repeaters. So you can extend your range, but even more exciting, you can occasionally speak to a real astronaut live.
Wow.
When I was at the San Diego Maker Faire, one of the ham radio guys came over and said, the other day I just happened to be listening on their band as they came over.
No way.
And they said, hey, we need to, you know, they wanted to test something out. So he got talking to a Russian cosmonaut.
I just started getting into ham radio myself. I just bought an SDR, and I've been playing with software-defined radio. That is so cool.
Now, all you need is a directional antenna and positioning information. You know where to point.
That's exactly it. And that version, I've already registered the domain. It's called SatAbove.
Nice.
And it's designed to track up to 16 satellites from the selection of the appropriate ones that hams would be interested in.
Ooh.
So that's another little project.
Okay, I'm going to follow that.
And I'm going to get in ham as well. Okay, so maybe because I just haven't got into that at all. So I'm sure that's where I'm going as well.
Liam, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so very much for coming up. Thank you for speaking to our audience. And you know, the reason why we have this episode is because we want to show the coders out there, the future code warriors, code monkeys, what they can do with a couple of ideas, a little bit of hardware, and some hard software knowledge. So, again, thank you so very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure being here. Thank you so much. This is my heaven to be in the brick house.
Well, we love having you.
Thank you.
And, of course, as usual, you can always find all of our information over at twit.tv/C101. That's our website where we have show notes, and we'll have links to all of Liam's information on there.
That's right. And if you can, why not jump over to our Google Plus page, which is, I believe, gplus.to/twitcoding101. It's a growing community, and we will be supporting each other's projects. If you think that you want to hack something together with a Raspberry Pi and a little bit of Python knowledge, why not jump into the community and ask them how? Liam had to search Google. Well, why not just ask the people that we know are part of the Twit community? Again, that's gplus.to/twitcoding101.
And if you're watching live, live.twit.tv and irc.twit.tv. That's the IRC, so you can jump in the chat room and ask us questions while we're doing the show live.
That's right.
Very fun, so definitely join us.
Well, both of us were pulling from the chat room as this episode was going. Now, also, you can find us, if you don't do the whole Google social media thing, on Twitter. You can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's at PadreSJ.
And I'm Snubs at Snubs.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasair.
I'm Shannon Morris.
End of line.
How do you do that in Python?
Well, I don't know.